This is Conquering Columbus.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Conquering Columbus podcast. We've got a really fun episode lined up for you today. On this interview, Josh and I are talking with Nathan Minns, founder of Greenlight Improv. Nathan started Greenlight Improv to help companies increase creativity and improve their communication skill sets using improv as a medium. And his unique perspective made me think a lot about how important communication is to a business's success. Early on in the show, we asked Nathan what drew him into entrepreneurship, and here's what he said.
What drew me towards it, I think, is some of the autonomy that you have in the startup world. And I think the idea that we don't have to ask for permission to do something, like I don't need to put in 30 years of work before I can lead something. I can lead something tomorrow if I start a company and do it.
Later, Nathan spoke about a conversation he had with someone who had attended one of his courses and how she had found some usefulness from the classes outside of work.
So at the very end of every workshop, as long as the client is okay with it, we have a survey that we give out to everyone that was in the workshop and the client. And it's a way for us to hear about what their experience in the workshop was, and we use it to make the workshop more impactful. But one question on there is, can we buy you free coffee? And then I buy coffee for any participant that wants, so that I can hear more about their experience, get to know them, and it's essentially user interviews. And right before I came here, I had one of those, and someone went to a one-hour workshop, and she told me that the workshop was about 2 weeks ago, and she told me that since then, she has talked to her husband about, you know, this is why I feel shut down sometimes, because you are no-budding me when I have an idea instead of yes-anding.
Nathan wraps up the show talking about what it means to live uncomfortably for him and the difference between intentional and unintentional discomfort.
Yeah, what I think about is making a conscious decision to push yourself a little bit outside of the box. And maybe that's like what we talked about earlier, is having conversations with people that you might disagree with. But I think the most important piece is that it's intentional, because no one wants to live a life that is uncomfortable. But when it's uncomfortable intentionally, and you understand that there's a big learning outcome that you'll get, it's far more worth it. So I would say it makes a lot of sense, even making it a daily practice, to do something that is just a little bit uncomfortable.
We had a fantastic time talking with Nathan, and I hope you enjoy the interview as well. That's all I've got today. Let's dive into the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is your co-host, Mike, here, and it is both Josh and I today. Josh, how are things going over there?
Good, dude.
Oh, you're loud. Let me turn you down a little bit.
The microphone is loud.
There you go. Are you good?
Life is good, dude. Just, you know, forgot what I have to do when I came in here, and so that's frustrating, but I'm sure that, you know,
yeah, my things life won't almost evolved fail into a fist fight prior to the show, because we started talking about coyote versus cow. It's a very important argument.
Not important, nor is it even an argument.
I'll explain for our listeners. You can comment and let us know who you think would win. But death match in an arena, one cow versus one dairy cow. Or sorry,
one dairy cow. Double cow, huh?
Double cow.
One dairy cow. Who's going to get this one?
Versus one coyote. Who wins? You can make it the biggest coyote you want. Coyotes get up to about 46 pounds. Cows weigh from 1,400 to 2,000 pounds. And Josh somehow thinks that a coyote might win that fight.
It's not a might. It's indefinite. Or isn't indefinite isn't the word, huh? It's definite. Very definite.
Yeah, okay. Okay. But now that you know what Josh and I spend our time arguing about when we're not on this show, I think that's a good point to introduce our guest today. So today we have Nathan Minns joining us. Nathan is the founder of Greenlight Improv. Nathan saw his first improv show in 2016 and was instantly hooked. He knew he wanted to do it himself, but he had a bit of a problem. It turns out improv isn't very easy. He was actually rejected 7 times before finally receiving a spot in one of the improv groups. And as he took classes and improved his improv skills, he realized he was becoming a better communicator and even increasing his creative thinking skills. That's where Greenlight Improv was born. Today, Nathan leads Greenlight Improv, which provides classes on improv to university students and corporations to help improve their team's creative thinking skills and innovation. We're excited to be talking with Nathan today about his journey, how improv can improve your business, and much more. Welcome to Conquering Columbus, Nathan.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. And I have to say that at the start, I was a coyote fan.
Yeah.
But your argument—
Converted him. Converted him to cow.
It was a very strong argument.
Yeah. I mean, you know, all I got to say is, can you take a 5-pound dog? That's the difference. Like, it's just the size is too, but we got to get away from this, because the whole podcast will be coyote versus cow. So—
And it's solved.
Yeah, it's solved. That's right. And so, Nathan, you prefer Nate or Nathan?
Nathan.
Nathan. There you go. Full name guy. All right. And so, Nathan, can you give us a little background on yourself, kind of your story? Like, have you always lived in Columbus? How'd you get to doing Green Light Improv? Like, everything kind of in the past.
Yeah. So I spent my first 12 years in Dayton, Ohio, in a suburb of Dayton, Centerville, Ohio. And then my parents got a new job. So I went to Columbus, Ohio. I grew up in Dublin, went to Dublin City Schools, and then I went to Ohio State. And when I was at Ohio State, I spent a lot of time in the entrepreneurial ecosystem of Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And as
what drew you towards that before we go further?
Yeah. What drew me towards it, I think, is some of the autonomy that you have in the startup world. And I think the idea that we don't have to ask for permission to do something, like I don't need to put in 30 years of work before I can lead something. I can lead something tomorrow if I start a company and do it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I worked at a startup and then I went through and did a venture studio as well. And then as I was in school, I started two companies, Green Light Improv. And then I was also doing web design. And
Very similar.
Yeah, very similar things. But after I graduated, I realized that I wanted to see if web design was something I really wanted to do long term. So I got a job at a web design agency and I got my answer after working there for about a year and a half. And it was that I did not want to do that. So I wanted to get back into the entrepreneurial ecosystem. So I went back to a venture studio, and essentially a venture studio is essentially a corporate startup studio. So corporations will outsource much of their innovation and get to be on the ground floor. And it's largely autonomous mm-hmm. for us. But after doing that, I led two startups there. After doing that, I realized that I really wanted to just own the process, because when you're at a venture studio, you still have to report to the C-suite. They still oftentimes own the product. So while you can give as many recommendations as you want, in the end of the day, it's their product. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to own the process. And so I quit my job and then I went full time into Green Light Improv. And I figured either I will crash and burn, mm-hmm. but I'll learn a lot, or I'll do well, I'll have a real company, and hopefully I'll also learn a lot. And it appears we're in the second camp, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what age were you when you made the jump?
When I quit my job, it was July of last year. So it was July 2022. Mm-hmm. So I was 24.
And did you have savings built up or like a good comfort net before you did it?
Yeah. I knew that I wouldn't have to make money for about a year, but ideally I would make money. But I knew that I didn't,
hopefully.
I didn't have to. I could still survive for a year. And I usually recommend people do it the opposite way, where you have a full-time job and you just scale up the part-time job and scale down the full-time job. But I just realized I wanted to get out there and do it. Yeah, I just quit my job and thought I'd figure it out as we went.
So let's go back to kind of just discovering improv, right? And you'd got involved in the improv space, right? You eventually got a chance to actually perform and do it. So what I'm curious about is being entrepreneurial minded, right? Like, when did you make that connection? It's like, hey, this is actually helping me do other things well.
Yeah. Well, I saw my very first improv show in 2016. And after I saw that show, I knew that it was something I wanted to do, because I saw that their brains were working so fast mm-hmm. on stage. They could just communicate like one brain, making this show in real time. And so, like you said earlier, I went out and auditioned and did not go very well. I thought I did incredible. Mm-hmm. I thought I blew everyone else out of the water, but it turns out that I was the only one that thought that I did well. So yeah, I ended up continuously taking classes and auditioning again. And through those classes, I realized that as I was becoming better on stage, I was becoming better off stage as well. Like, as I was becoming a better improviser, I was becoming a better communicator, mm-hmm. better entrepreneur. And I even found that every job I had, when I asked them why they hired me, they said very often that I was just a different candidate than everyone else because I had some passion that was not sure. the thing that I was doing. It made me a little more interesting than some of the other candidates. And I would say through those classes, that was really something that made me realize that there was something there.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, I think Josh and I both, I mean, I don't know if Josh would agree, but doing a podcast has definitely helped my selling and my ability to communicate with people and ask good questions, because we practice it a whole lot, right? And it's something that I think helps with your communication skills enormously. So there's lots of things you can do that you can be passionate about that improve your day-to-day work.
And so how did you find the line between not at least others being good at improv and then making the jump and being good? You know, like sometimes people look back and they realize, oh, I need to change this, this, and this. Like I needed to control my emotions more in high adrenaline states so I could think clear. Is there certain things that stick out to you?
Yeah, I would say one thing that I think every beginning improviser does, and that I certainly did as well, is most people think that when you go and do improv, you're going on stage and you're just telling jokes. And what very often happens is that people get on stage, they're a beginning improviser, they get on stage and they tell a joke, and usually two things happen. One, no one laughs because making jokes is really hard. And that's why we have a whole nother art form for it called stand-up. And the second thing that happens is that everyone in the audience knows that you tried to tell a joke and that no one laughed, and then they have to sit in this uncomfortable silence. And so I think that one thing that was very helpful for me is through those classes to get the practice of performing in front of other people. Because we talk about this cycle of almost the lean startup cycle, this build, measure, learn kind of cycle. You grow so much faster if you perform in front of an audience because you can hear their laughter, you understand what they think is funny, and you can double down on that and grow through your improv. But when you're just practicing alone, if us three did improv right now, there would probably be not very much laughter because we're all in the scene.
Oh, because Mike's here too, so.
I know.
Oh, that was improv.
Yeah, so.
You gotta laugh.
Yeah, so the problem with it though is that we don't have any of the feedback. So I would say the biggest thing I needed was just getting the reps in and having some sort of audience that I could learn from.
Had you ever, and if I missed it, I apologize, had you ever done improv prior to leaving your job and wanting to start an improv company?
Yeah, so I did improv in college. I did improv in college and I took a bunch of classes through college and since then too. And I started Greenlight Improv in college. I did it for about a year.
What was it then? Was it the same thing as it is now? So that was my first question that I wanted to ask. So I'm going to jump in here because you said you started in college. What was it then? And did that change when you made that leap at 24?
Yeah. So I would say when I first started Greenlight Improv, this is how it started. I had this idea that improv affects your other work and life skills. And I had heard the phrase, jump before you're ready, find the ground while you're falling. And so I thought that I would try to figure that out. So it was a Thursday night. I texted a bunch of friends and said, I'm going to do an improv workshop on Saturday. And I'd love if you came. It's free. And we're going to do some improv. And I got 6 people there. And with those 6 people, I made a plan in those 48 hours to do improv. And I led just typical improv exercises. And I found that improv is often very difficult for people. And I found that they weren't growing in a communications way as much as I expected that they would. And it was because I was doing typical improv exercises and then saying, so what'd you get out of it? Did you learn anything? And they didn't learn very much because the exercises are designed to be funny, not to give you communications insights. And so what we've done now is adjust it so that all of our exercises are very beginner friendly and very focused on communication skills, entrepreneurship skills. And what we say now is everything we're doing is using improv comedy as a tool. So improv is useful to the extent that it helps us develop our entrepreneurship and communication skills, but we're not teaching pure improv. So at the very beginning, I was teaching improv, and then I very quickly learned we need to move away from that. But yeah, I started in college. It was part-time pretty much that entire time until July of last year, and it's been great since.
And you realized you needed to move away from it because you needed a niche that would motivate people to want to do it, or what was the reasoning behind moving away?
Yeah, because I had this idea that I wanted to affect their communication skills and entrepreneurship skills, and what I was doing just wasn't accomplishing that goal. And honestly, there are already an incredible amount of people that train people to do improv very well. And I also didn't want to compete with them. Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit of both, that a vision angle and there's no way I can compete with a second city, for example.
Yeah.
And so when you jump off and you're going to do the company full time, is it going to be a B2B model where you go in and we had Ruth Milligan on previously, who does, executive level presence and many other things inside of a B2B organization in terms of how people present themselves and communication, all those aspects. And so were you thinking similar inside of, but with respect to improv, were you thinking B2C for people that want to become entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I was always thinking that it would be B2B. I was always thinking B2B. When I first started, I had this idea that I would do corporate work. And what I very quickly learned is that the corporations had no interest in hiring a college student to spend 2 or 3 hours of their team's time with something that might be useless. And that was something that came across in my pricing. I was pricing way too low. All of the clients knew it, but I didn't know it, which made me look a little unprofessional. And I was in college and I tried to use that and play the student card, which didn't work in the B2B market. So yeah, I ended up going just straight to university. So when in that first year, I worked primarily with university students.
And then, so as you kind of transitioned to last year, you're deciding to make that move, right? Had that changed at that point? Or did you decide, hey, we got to make a conscious pivot? Like, what does today look like? How's your go-to-market changed?
Yeah. How we typically get clients now is somewhat similar to how we got it back then, but just on a much bigger scale. So how we got our very first client is that we had that first workshop where we invited six people. And there was a CEO of a local company in that workshop. He liked it enough to pay us to come in, which was incredible. And then I spent the rest of the time just doing higher ed work. Now it's a lot of similar style of events where I'll go and do a workshop where there are a lot of people from different companies. They'll all get to experience it because sometimes it's difficult to convey what happens. And once they experience it, they typically want to bring it back to their company. So the most common way we get work is someone experiences it, and then it's word of mouth from there.
Hey, everybody. Mike here. We're going to take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors, One Columbus. And we are very excited to partner with One Columbus. They really, really share the same vision as us here at the Conquering Columbus podcast, which is really building up the Columbus region to be one of the most prosperous regions in the United States. And One Columbus serves as the business location resource for companies across Central Ohio and around the world as those companies grow, innovate, and compete within the global economy. And they help us lead a regional growth strategy that develops and attracts the world's most competitive companies, grows a highly adaptive workforce, and prepares our communities for the future, inspiring innovation across the board. Their mission really is just ensuring the Columbus region is a vibrant place to build businesses and careers. So again, we really appreciate all of their support. You want to learn more about them, go check out their website, columbusregion.com. That's columbusregion.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back into the episode.
And talk about the value and the skill set that it helps you develop. How do you see people change and evolve as a result of the exercise?
Yeah, I would say that there are a couple common problems that we're solving from beginning to end of the workshop. Very commonly, we're brought in for someone saying, my group isn't connected as well as I think they could be. People aren't communicating as well as they could. And that could either be they're not presenting their ideas very confidently, or they're not listening to each other well, or it's I don't understand the entrepreneurial process very well. And we need a fun, engaging way for them to learn more about this entrepreneurial process. That's sort of the types of problems we solve. And the way we go through those problems is through these workshops that are usually around 1 to 4 hours. And in the workshop, it's very hands-on. So we talk for the first around 10 minutes. And after that, it's half partner exercises, half groups of 4 to 6. But sometimes at the beginning of the workshop, people aren't communicating very much to each other. They're all sitting on their phone and just thinking or texting someone else. And you can see through the workshop, they open up, start talking with each other more. And through the end, sometimes you can't get them to leave the building. And so one time I went into this workshop, and very often we're brought in by an individual that is a representative of a group. So I always tell people to tell your group that I'm coming. But I came into this group, and I was just chatting with everyone I was about to do a workshop with. And I said, hey, are you ready to do some improv? And this woman looked at me and said, I'm not doing improv. And I was like, well, I mean, we should talk about this. Like, we should talk about this with the person that brought me in. And we started the workshop. And in that first 10 minutes, it wasn't a time when I was asking for someone to volunteer to raise their hand or anything, but someone raised their hand and is like, okay, sure. I'll take a question now. And she said, I just want to let you know that we are all introverts and we're going to hate this. And I thought, well, we have 2 hours.
Well, that wasn't a question. Right. So
yeah,
that's a comment. That's not how you use the hand raising function.
Yeah, I was like, well, thank you for your input. But I was like, you know, we have 2 hours. And so I told her, thank you for letting me know. Thanks for being open with me about how you're feeling. All I'll ask is that you give me 15 minutes. And if you hate it after 15 minutes, that's fine. I won't do anything else. I won't try to push you to facilitate as in. And I saw maybe about an hour into this 2-hour workshop, she was volunteering for the entire room. She wanted to share her whole ideas with the whole group. And I felt like that was a big win because it was someone that very confidently did not want to participate.
Right.
And we moved her through the workshop.
Well, I can see so much of the value from it because if you think about like what we did in exercise when I was actually still working with Mike here at FMX with Ruth, and it was very strong in communicating personally and how I present myself and how I can express my ideas in the right way to other individuals. But the ability to communicate with each other in a way that allows your nerves to go away, takes away the sense of, am I being judged or is my idea going to be stupid? Like the amount of companies over, I don't know, maybe even 5 people, definitely 10, 15 people who start to get big enough to the point where you got to bring a lot of people in a room together that probably have amazing opportunities to optimize what they're doing left behind because of the person that didn't want to speak up who is more introverted. And so unless you're a business owner that goes through every single position of the company several times a year or something, you don't get that kind of stuff. And so if you can teach people to speak up and communicate with each other, I mean, that's powerful.
I think another big thing about improv, right, is, well, I've heard from some folks who've done improv, is knowing when to jump in and when to tee someone up for an opportunity, right? Because I think that's a big part, because like if one person dominates the whole improv, it's not going to be as funny. And you need to give other people opportunity and know when is right for you to butt in with your concept.
Yeah. Yeah. We always talk about how when you're on stage, you want to make your scene partner look good. And if I'm doing that to you, you're doing that to me, then together we make a great scene. But yeah, if you have someone that's more in a stand-up type mode, then it can be a little bit more where they sort of own the space. And it's not as much of improv at that point.
Because it takes good teamwork. Improv takes teamwork.
And I like to say too, oftentimes, especially in college, but oftentimes in the corporate market too, the managers or program managers will ask me, should I participate too? Like, should the manager participate? And I always say, of course. Yeah, you're welcome to participate. And the thing that it often does is that no one in the room usually has a lot of improv experience, and certainly not the type of improv that we do, which is more focused on certain learnings. And it tends to be a good equalizer for everyone on the team, where the people that are lower in the organization see the C-suite as human and they all get to connect with each other. Yeah, I think it's a nice moment just for the teamwork side too.
How do you feel about, maybe not how do you feel, because I would assume I know, but maybe just to comment on the value of communication. You know, as I'm thinking through this, I'm thinking, you know, your ability to find a significant other in life, your ability to move a room and motivate people, your ability to align people around a vision, like everything is centered around communication, but we put so little value on it. I mean, like we have undergraduate studies about communication and things like that, right? But it's not like, I mean, if you get a degree in communication, people look down upon you.
You don't normally get a communications course in high school.
Yeah.
Well, you get in college, I'm saying.
Well, I know, but like high school students, right? That's a well-rounded education. You're supposed to be graduating, but you don't do communications.
Yes. Class, and it's so hard to see the direct results immediately, right? I mean, I guess it is if you're able to look people in the eyes, have empathy and pick up on what's happening, but you, as opposed to accomplishing a task or doing something very objective. And so like, but you think about it, it's like probably, I wonder what the factor is of successful people where communication was a major attribute. Successful communication was a major attribute of the personality.
So at the very end of every workshop, as long as the client is okay with it, we have a survey that we give out to everyone that was in the workshop and the client. And it's a way for us to hear about what their experience in the workshop was. And we use it to make the workshop more impactful. But one question on there is, can we buy you free coffee? And then I buy coffee for any participant that wants so that I can hear more about their experience, get to know them. And it's essentially user interviews. And right before I came here, I had one of those. And someone went to a 1-hour workshop. And she told me that the workshop was about 2 weeks ago. And she told me that since then, she has talked to her husband about, you know, this is why I feel shut down sometimes, because you are no-budding me when I have an idea instead of yes-anding. So what if we have a yes-and space where we accept ideas, respect ideas, and then consider how we can make them work later? But it's just, it's very interesting to me that I typically teach these things in a work context. And then when I said, what was your experience in the workshop? What did you take away? The first thing she said was, it makes communicating with my husband a lot easier and communicating with my in-laws a lot easier. And that was not something I expected to hear her say.
Yeah, yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah. So what does the team look like today? What are you guys working on? Like, what are the initiatives you have going on right now that you're excited about?
Yeah. So the team, originally it started, obviously, with just me. Mm-hmm. And now we have, I think, 5 facilitators, 1 full-time person who's a account manager, operations kind of person. And I would say the biggest initiative that I'm excited about, it started a couple months ago. I was doing a keynote, or I was at least talking to a client about a keynote. And in the call, they said, of course, Nathan, we'll also buy a copy of your book for everyone in the room. And I said, you know, that's actually going to be pretty difficult because I don't have a book.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you're going to buy my book. But that was a good realization that, you know, people want some takeaway. Mm-hmm. So one initiative that I have now is that I still don't want to do a book mm-hmm. because everything I do is very engaging, interactive. And I see a book as more of one-way kind of communication, more similar to a keynote. So one thing I'm doing is transitioning some of the exercises we do in our workshop and transitioning it into a game that you can take home. Mm. Use improv to work on your communication skills, entrepreneurship, quick thinking skills, alone or with some friends. But that's one thing that we're working on now that we have like a beta that we're using in with some small groups, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Points won't matter, right?
Points might matter.
Does anybody get that reference? No? Wow, man. That's an old reference. It's a reference to, whose line is it anyway? Famous improv show.
Yeah.
Welcome to Whose Line Is It Anywhere, where everything's made up and the points don't matter.
That's true.
I'm old. All right.
There are a variety of improv shows where they say the points don't matter.
Yeah.
and actually, I will say, if someone has ever heard of improv mm-hmm. and they know one other thing about improv, it's Whose Line.
Yeah.
What was your undergrad studying? Did you say that earlier too and I missed it?
It was marketing. And then I had a minor in theater.
It's interesting. I mean, you think about things in a very unique way. Like, you come across as someone who's much more older and mature than what you are. And do you think that's come from the last
year? Are you saying he's immature?
No. I mean, I said he is mature. He comes across, you know, like, I mean, most people are 24. I don't think, at least they don't articulate themselves. So I can't tell if it's communication or if it's the brain function. Because, you know, some people, so I'm sure the brain function is very high, but some people don't communicate it, you know, as well as what you're doing. So do you think that's come from running this business over the last 24 months or whatever it's been? Or do you think it's been, did you grow up in an environment where your parents just were entrepreneurial and helped and forced you to be mature quickly? Like, what is your background?
Yeah. I mean, I think that where it comes from is a couple of, I think being in theater and in the business school, for example, it puts you in 2 different arenas where honestly, some of the people in the business school looked at the arts and said, why would we do that? Why do we have art? We should get rid of it. And then a lot of people in the arts will look at the business school and think these people are profit motivated and they're terrible people. Obviously, this isn't everyone, but it is some people. So I think in some ways, having to balance between these as in the business school, being very open about doing theater and in theater, everyone knowing that I'm a business major, that makes you balance a little bit. And then one other thing that I think is useful is to continuously put yourself in situations that makes you encounter beliefs that you don't have. My favorite kind is culturally. So finding people from other cultures and talking about how their culture works and seeing how ours is very different. Like, I was in France. I talked to someone about how he was not working then. And I said, oh, are you looking for a job? He's like, no. And I was like, interesting. How does that work? And he said, well, I can make enough money in 6 months to live for a year. So I work for 6 months and then I take 6 months off. And that's how he lives. He'll work for 6 months and then he wants to challenge himself in some other way. So that was in 2019 when I was talking to him, or 2020. And he said, yeah, in about a month, I'm going to live in Ukraine. I'm going to learn the language. I'm going to, you know, have a good time. And then I'll come back and get a job and then I'll go back again. So it's just, that's something that I have never heard or could imagine someone that was born in the US to say. And so I think just seeing some different perspectives is a good way to develop some of those communication skills.
And just the willingness to go into those ideas and conversations, right? The vulnerability that it takes to say that my convictions might not be wrong and it's not tied up in my identity and I'm willing to have a logical conversation. I think that's probably what 90% of, I don't know if I want to say the US, maybe it's the world, right? It's like nobody really wants to have super open, difficult conversations like that. Mm-hmm. I think we tend to jump to the opinion that feels easy to accept, maybe a little too often.
We don't like challenges to our integral belief system.
Yeah, and just to critically think hard sometimes, right? Yeah. Like I think some people just don't want to think very hard.
And one easy way to get around that, I guess, if that is too much of a jump into it, one easy way to get around is just to say you're learning about how some other person lives, but you don't have to consider it for yourself if you really don't want to. I mean, that man, I talked to him, he was from Paris, and I talked to him for 8 hours mm-hmm. in a bar. So it was a long conversation. But yeah, I think that one way is like it's essentially like reading a book where you're hearing how someone else lives. You don't have to consider it for your own life, which could make it a little easier to not have to deal with some moral problems mm-hmm. for yourself. But I think life's a little more interesting if you can consider it for yourself. And I'm not going to live like him, but hearing how he lives encourages me to take care of myself a little bit better.
And what the theater element, like, do you get nervous when you get up in front of large groups of people or when you're in improv? Like, are you able to just totally, because all the reps smash those emotions away and keep your adrenaline down?
Sometimes I'm not very nervous when I go on stage, but I think I'm usually nervous in the way that I care about what I'm about to do. And so I have some nerves, but it's more of, am I going to have the impact I want to have in a workshop? But it's just comes from me caring about the result. Mm-hmm. But I would say I'm not very frequently scared of talking in front of an audience.
Yeah. It's not the people, it's the process.
Yeah. And I think that that's good. I think if you really care about something, that's where some of the nervousness comes from. And no matter how much you rehearse, you should have a little bit. My opening 10 minutes, I've said that thousands of times. Mm-hmm. And every time I do it, you know, I'm still just a little bit antsy, but I know that it's good to have those kinds of feelings.
Well, Nathan, I think that's a good place to kind of head towards some of our last questions of the show, unless Josh, you got anything left in the tank?
I got nothing left.
All right. Well, so our last couple of questions, first one being, hey, do you have any advice for our listeners out there? Now, our listeners are a lot like you, right? They're Columbus folks. They focus on entrepreneurship, business. They want to be successful, usually in that 25 to 40 range, but it's pretty widespread.
When someone asks me for entrepreneurship advice, my biggest piece of advice is to just start something. And ideally, it's something you really care about. And it can be a side project. I'm not saying quit your job, but you'll learn so much just from starting something. And I learned that by in a job at a venture studio when I was still in school, I said something and then someone else in the room looked at me and said, Nathan, what do you know? You haven't even started a company. And I was like, all right, that was a little harsh.
But, fair. Harsh, but fair.
Yeah. And then that led me to starting a company. And after I did that, I realized why he said it like that, because there are just so many tasks that you have to do when you're starting something on your own that you don't realize as an employee mm-hmm. that are happening. So I would say, yeah, just go out, start something. And if you don't know how to start, read The Lean Startup and go from there.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Well, Nathan, our last question of the show is centered around the theme here on Conquering Columbus, which is live uncomfortably. Not telling you too much about why we chose that particular phrase for a show about entrepreneurs. What do you think of when you hear it? How's it applied to your life and career?
Yeah. What I think about is making a conscious decision to push yourself a little bit outside of the box. And maybe that's like what we talked about earlier is having conversations with people that you might disagree with. But I think the most important piece is that it's intentional, because no one wants to live a life that is uncomfortable. But when it's uncomfortable intentionally and you understand that there's a big learning outcome that you'll get, it's far more worth it. So I would say it makes a lot of sense, even making it a daily practice to do something that is just a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, right on. Well, Nathan, it's been great talking to you. It's been a lot of fun and learning more about Greenlight Improv and your story. So appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and Conquerors, thanks so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed that episode, you want to hear more just like it, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you are listening on. It'll make sure you never miss an interview from us. We appreciate all your support. We'll talk to you next week.